I invite you to take a breath. And as you release it, to allow the chair to support you. And do a mental scan of your body, beginning at the head and moving down through your neck and shoulders and chest area, hips and legs, and feet, arms and hands. And any place that you feel any tension, breathe, targeting that area. And as we settle for a few moments apart, we focus on today, our fourth Sunday of Lent. Today's affirmation reads, each day I take time for spiritual renewal and silence, contemplation, and gratitude. What a blessing it is to take time apart to be, to release the doings of the day, all that took you to do in preparation for being here now. We release it and settle in to spirit, the inner being, the divine light and spirit that inhabits every one of us. We take this moment to come apart, to affirm, to remember our truth. It is not I that does the work. I do not do this work. I don't do it alone. I co-create with the power and presence from within and live from the inside out. During the hustle and bustle of the days, as we tick off our to-do lists, it is a gift to ourselves to take a moment and breathe and remember, I am enough. To remember that I am equipped with everything required to do what is mine to do. Say what is mine to say, give what is mine to give, and to be a joyful receiver. We give thanks for remembering our truth that rebirth, rejuvenation, and renewal is part of our makeup. Each of us is wired for renewal. So as we continue our journey through this Lenten season, focusing on spiritual renewal, rebirth, and resurrection, we remember that being is crucial. Taking on new thoughts, refreshing current thoughts, remembering how to be. Going in, consulting spirit to guide us to be the best each of us can be. As we move into a moment of silence, let us contemplate with gratitude that renewal is always possible. Every moment of every day, we can choose renewal. And in just that brief period of silence, we have the opportunity to experience renewal. It is through renewal and remembering our truth that we can move forward to be the good we desire to see in the world, to be the joy we desire to see in the world, and be a reflection, an embodiment of the kindness we wish to see in our world. For this, we are deeply grateful. We say thank you, thank you, thank you, and so it is.
I came in this morning and I said, okay guys, this old thing again, and they just went, whoop, there we are. So, it's interesting, it's Lent, and the first year I was at Unity, Sean got up and he said, you know, for Lent, what Sean recommends is that me? Did I? The first year, Sean got up, and what he assigns people for Lent is to not gossip, complain, or criticize for the length of Lent. And Sean got up and he said, this is the third day of Lent, and I have not gossiped, complained, or criticized, except for one hairdo I could not let go by. So, we do our best. Okay, I'm going to talk about kindness today. Kindness has always held a very special and unique place in my heart, because kindness is something that we can always, always choose. We can't necessarily feel loving towards someone, but we can choose to be kind. We can't necessarily not feel irritated or angry, but we can choose to be kind. We can't necessarily solve a problem for somebody, but we can choose to be kind. We don't necessarily agree on politics or taste, but we can be kind. We can't necessarily have the physical or the financial wherewithal to help someone, but we can be kind. And so there's a saying that I love to say, say what you mean. Mean what you say. Don't say it mean. So to be able to just say, I can't do that, or I'm very angry, or whatever, without the attack. And now last spring, I had a book that was supposed to come out. It's still supposed to come out. It's called How They Met, and it's about relationships of long standing, how people met. And it was delayed for various reasons, and my publisher said to me, do you have another idea for a book? And I didn't, but I never have ideas. Spirit does. So I just sat still and I said, what's going to come to me? And what came to me was to take the song, We Can Be Kind, and take each line of the song and make it a chapter heading and write essays about that particular subject. You know, nobody really wants to fight, or so many things we can't control, or everyone wants to make things right. And then in the book, there are sections in each chapter that talk about how we can be kind to others, things we can do, but perhaps even more importantly, how we can be kind to ourselves. Because that is really what I'm going to talk about today. Now, while I was writing that book, I was writing another book. My Thought Exchange publisher asked me to write a book. Since I've been teaching Thought Exchange all over the country for, it says 5 years there, it's actually more like 15, but time flies. And he asked me to write a book. You know, my big Thought Exchange Bible really tells you everything you need to know. He said, can you write something that is just all the exercises that you've come up with and that you've taught in order from beginning to end so someone can take themselves through the whole process? So I wrote that book. And the interesting thing about it is that where that book starts is that everything is only happening inside of ourselves in the form of sensations and thoughts. That is all that's going on. I like to say to people, I see you, but I cannot prove that you are out there. All I know is I experience you in the form of my thoughts and my sensations. And you might be out there. If I was dreaming, I'd experience you that way too. And I once said to Kathy Lee, I can't prove that you're out there. And she said, believe me, I'm out here. But so the only way we know anything, there is nothing objectively happening outside. It's only happening in me. I look at you and I see my thoughts about you. I do not see you. Sean likes to say, doesn't it drive you nuts when people you can't stand have friends? Because I'll look at someone and I'll say, I can't stand that person. And they say, what do you mean? I love that person. Oh, no. Oh, yes. There's no truth in there, except I get to see where I'm stuck, where I'm blocked, where my world is limited. So nothing objectively is happening, and there's no one out there, which people sometimes say, isn't that sad that no one? I say, no, because you're all in here. My experience of you is in here. You know, when someone makes a transition, I'm experiencing them inside of myself just as I was when they were alive. There's no way to get out there. It's only my experience. I can talk to those people in the same way. I can, the truth of those people is still there. I was interviewed for my book by John Edward, the medium. And I said to him, I said, well, I'm gonna get a little woo-woo now. And he said, And I was talking about how that who anyone is an invisible consciousness located nowhere, looking at thoughts and sensations. And I suddenly thought, so wait a minute, when you talk to dead people, it's exactly the same to you as talking to living people, isn't it? And he said, yeah, I'm talking to an invisible consciousness located nowhere. That's who we all are. And this afternoon, we're gonna work on that more if you wanna really disappear. I actually did a course up at Unity of Norwalk on my whole book, and I made people pay in advance. And the first part of it was getting that you are an invisible consciousness located nowhere. And about an hour through, I said, now you know why I made you pay in advance. You all want to run out of the room, don't you? And actually, one of my favorite jokes is a rabbi and a priest are sitting in chambers, and they're talking about theology, and the rabbi looks up and says, I am nothing. And the priest looks up and says, I am nothing. And the janitor's walking by and he hears them and he says, I am nothing. And they say, oh, look now, who thinks he's nothing? So when we understand that it's all inside, the book is called It's All Inside, and that you're only working on your thoughts and sensations and all you're seeing in the world is what you think. And so people say, gee, I don't know, what's my unconscious thought? It's sitting right in front of you. That's like me saying, I don't know, am I wearing a blue shirt? And I'm sitting in front of a mirror. I can see it. And then if I decide I want the mirror to change, and I go, okay, mirror, I am not moving until you move. It can't. It can't move. It can't do anything because it's only reflecting me. The world is only reflecting you. So the thing to do all this work, we have to understand that we're only seeing our thoughts and sensations. So when it comes to kindness, kindness can only happen inside ourselves. Kindness, we mistakenly think that is something we do for someone else or do to someone else. But kindness is a way of being, a way of creating a world inside of ourselves by the way we see the world. And so my book is called We Can Be Kind, Healing Our World One Kindness at a Time. But I don't mean the world, that world, I mean our world. Healing my world through kindness. It's only inside. So knowing that, although in the mirror it looks like we're practicing kindness to give someone something, we're actually practicing kindness to create an experience for ourselves. And when we can look at the way the kindness actually works, we suddenly realize kindness is never a sacrifice. It's not like, oh God, I gotta be nice to that person, I gotta be kind to them. It has nothing to do with that. You're being kind to yourself. You're not depriving yourself of anything by being kind. You are creating a world inside of yourself. Now, my favorite example, which is in the book, is something that happened to me in 2001. And the World Trade Center had just happened. And it was Christmas, and Christmas, children send letters to Santa Claus, North Pole, and they drop them in the mailbox, and they end up at the post office. And you can go and pick one up and be Santa Claus. It has their address on it. It has what they want. So this one year, right after the World Trade Center, I went to the post office and I got a letter from a third grader. And she said, you know, Santa, if you exist, I feel bad even asking because I'm one of the lucky ones. I didn't lose my parents in the World Trade Center and so many people are suffering. But my mommy and daddy are out of work and we don't have money for Christmas. So if you could get me some chapter books and a bear and some things for my computer, I would appreciate it. So I thought, all right, I'm going to really go all out here. So first I went to Barnes & Noble. I didn't know what chapter books were. Apparently, it's a big thing in third grade. You have chapters. You know, it's not just Dick and Jane. And I got a bunch of chapter books. And then I went to Toys R Us, and I got a bear bigger than me. I mean, it was like this. And then I went to Kmart, and I got a $300 gift certificate and for their computer department. And I wrote a letter. I took red stationery, and I wrote Santa Claus, North Pole. And I said, dear, I don't even remember her name. I got your lovely letter, and I wanted to make sure that you got what you wanted, so I hope you like the chapter books, and I hope you like the bear, and take this gift certificate to Kmart with your mommy and daddy, and get what you want. And I sent it off. I went to mailboxes, etc., and they charge you half price when you're doing it for this reason, and I sent it off. And I felt so wonderful. But what I realized is I didn't feel wonderful because I was so magnanimous. I felt wonderful because I now know that I live in a world where I could have some desire that I have no possibility of knowing how to fulfill, and I don't know where it's going to come from, and someone I never met or never heard of, or something from out of the blue could completely, beyond my wildest dreams, fill that. I now live in that world because I created that world. Because that's where I went, and I'm a human being, and everybody's a human being, so that is possible for everyone to do. And that world is created for me. It's for me. So, understanding that it's all inside, kindness helps us remember that we live in one world. There is not you and me. There is you in me. There is not God and me. There is God in me. There is not the church and me. There is, I am the church. And there's a story in the book that I want to read to you. This is about Sean. I talk about Sean a lot because we live together. It's about something that happened in our church that I feel is relevant. I tell it in churches all around the country. It's based on the John F. Kennedy quote, ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. A number of years ago, when our small Unity Church in Connecticut seemed to be in trouble, our minister, my partner Sean, decided to apply John F. Kennedy's famous inaugural words to the congregation. Our church had hit a patch where we seemed to be in financial trouble. Reverend Sean was aware that when a church, or any organization for that matter, hits financial difficulty, it is often because the members of the community have failed to recognize their connectedness and their power. When this happens in the church, it often shows up as lack of funds, as the congregation not increasing because when new people come, they don't feel welcomed, or as people falling away from the congregation because in thinking of the church as a place that's supposed to do something for them, they feel disappointed. To work on the issues the church was having, Reverend Sean called a town meeting at which the congregation was asked to voice ideas as to how the church could expand, be more fiscally independent, and most of all, function as a community in which the congregation took charge of its own welfare. There were four parts of this meeting. In the first part, people were asked to take an inventory of what they liked in the church. So that everyone would get a chance to speak, we have a small church, so about 60 people at a typical service. They each had 2 minutes to list everything the church already had that they liked. When a store takes inventory, it catalogs what it has on the shelves and in storage. It does not catalog what it doesn't have. Imagine that inventory if you listed everything you don't have. So first, Reverend Sean wanted a list of what the church had, what was working, what people came to church for. He wrote all these down on a whiteboard so we could all see them. In the second part, people were asked to voice any complaints they had about the church. There was a very specific way in which they were asked to do this. Rather than complaining, they were asked to list what they would like to see in the church that they didn't see there now. In this way, the comments were made in a positive way that emphasized infinite possibility as opposed to lack. Again, Reverend Sean wrote down the entire list of things the congregation would like to see in the church. In the third part, people were asked for suggestions as to how the community might manifest the things the congregation had said they'd like to see. People had a tremendous amount of creative and interesting suggestions as to committees that could be formed, fundraisers that could occur, benefit concerts that could be put on, consciousness-raising workshops, etc. Reverend Sean wrote them all down on the board and then turned to the congregation and said, "Okay, how are we going to do this?" One member of the congregation gave a diatribe on how a certain committee should be formed and how it should be run. When Reverend Sean asked her if she was willing to take responsibility for this, she said, "No, I don't have the time." Reverend Sean's succinct answer was, "If you don't have the time to either do it yourself or see to it that the right people are put together to get it done, we're not interested in your bringing it up." Needless to say, this congregant left the church and has never been back. But what began to happen as a result of this exchange was that the consciousness of the congregation began to shift from one of "the church has to do things for me" to "this is my church. A church is the people in it, not the building, not the minister, but a group of people who form it. The rule became that if you want to see something done and brought it up, it was your responsibility to either get it done or spearhead getting it done by taking responsibility for asking people who could do it to form a committee to do it. Gradually, people who were not interested in taking this kind of responsibility fell away, and a flock of new people began to show up to join the core group that was willing to not only have ideas, but to make them happen. Today, the church is a thriving, successful, financially viable community of people who feel very connected to each other and are very confident in their ability to together make things happen. There is tremendous friendship, passion, and yes, kindness among the congregation, as they have learned that it's not enough to talk about it. You have to do it yourself or in some way see that it gets done. And so I have discovered in our church, you know, we live in Connecticut, I suddenly realized that there are probably 20 or 30 people I could call at 3 in the morning if I had a problem. That this church is the center of something that is so important. So this book talks about all different stories and ways to practice kindness. Another way is to accept life on its own terms. To be with what is, and in thought exchange terms, to be with how it feels, what the sensations are when something happens. This brings us around to the definition of kindness being the definition of love. To me, love is allowing everything to be as it is. When we say the love of God, God doesn't go, "I love you because you're that way or this way." It is, God is love itself. And love is, however I am, that is seen and allowed and can be been with. So when we can be with whatever is going on, the reason we don't do that is because it feels uncomfortable often. When we understand that our entire experience is just thoughts and sensations, we realize that there is no danger in being with what is. If we can experience our thoughts and our sensations, even if they're uncomfortable, and so we allow ourselves to not resist life, then we can look at what is actually in front of us and use the mirror of life to heal, because all we're healing is our thoughts. When we try to control it, we are clamping down and we are not allowing spirit to work. When we look at it, feel it, allow it, look at life, look at the infiniteness of life, we allow spirit, call it God, call it whatever you want to call it, to come in with its infinite possibilities that we've never thought of. So one of my favorite things to say when people say, "You know, I finally decided to give up control," I like to say, "You had it?" I mean, there's so many areas, so many things we can't control. That's where the song starts. our economy, other countries, sudden illness, unforeseen accidents. In 12 steps, we learn we can't control an alcoholic's drinking or someone's eating or someone's behavior. We don't control the weather. We don't even control things in ourselves. One of the things I like to say is, I'd like you to eat this piece of food, but I'm going to ask you to determine how much amino acid you're going to secrete in order to digest it. And people say, that's crazy. Yes, it's as crazy as our trying to control other things. Sometimes I say to someone, can you increase your heart rate? And they say, no. And I say, I can. When I move, spirit, God, whatever, does what's necessary. I don't know how that happens. I don't care. In fact, thank God, and I mean literally thank God, I don't have to control those things because I would go nuts. So there are all sorts of ways in which we can experience kindness. One of my favorite stories is from the section Nobody Really Wants to Fight. It's a famous story, and it's called Silent Night. And during World War II, on Christmas Eve, the German soldiers were in their bunkers on one side of a field, the Americans on the other side with bodies in the middle and all the stuff. They were hunkered down for the night. And suddenly, a candle came up from the German side. And then a sign that said, we won't fight if you don't fight. And gradually, the soldiers took the risk, and they came out of their bunkers, and they met in the middle of the field, and they buried the dead, and they exchanged supplies, and they played card games and soccer, and they gave gifts. And then they went back to war the next day. It's not the soldiers it's not humans who have a gripe with each other. We are all humans. There's not another side. There's whatever. We're making that up. And so to realize, deep down inside, we all need the same thing. There's another story. My friend Mitchell Savage, who used to be very active in this church, he now lives in California, he does something called kamikaze drive-by prayer. He wakes up in the morning and he thinks, who can I pray for today? And he prays really hard for this person all day. And then he calls him up at night and says, how was your day? And invariably, he finds all sorts of wonderful things have happened for this person, or all sorts of breakthroughs. So there's all sorts of ways in which you can practice kindness. One of the things we tend to do is we tend to project our problems out to other people and then try to deal with them. But that's because we're unaware that they're going on inside of us. My grandmother came over here at 12 by herself, difficulty, and my mother, my grandmother, and I at one point had the same housekeeper. I lived on the west side. And one day I said to Ida, our housekeeper, I said, how's Nana doing? And she said, oh, she was depressed. And then your mother got sick and whoosh, she perked right up. She had something outside of herself to focus on because she couldn't focus on her own pain. I had something happen where I just did a show off Broadway and the critics were coming out the next day, and I said to Sean, I'm so worried because so many times, a critic has destroyed me and it's been tough. And Sean gave me the usual, Unity stuff of you making this up, you don't know what's going to happen. And I went to bed and I got up and I said, you know what? I know you're telling me don't make up a story about it, but if I don't make up a story about it, I feel the pain that I have inside. This has happened to me many times. I can't pretend that this hasn't happened. I can't pretend that that comes up. So I said, I'll tell you what, I will not make up a story if you can look at me and just allow that I'm in pain. And just look over there and go, I see your pain. We don't have to make up a story. We don't have to say something terrible is gonna happen. Just here you are. And so it starts with us being able to be with our pain, with our own stuff. Then we can look at the world, and the world becomes not this thing that's attacking us. It becomes this fantastic mirror, because I'm looking, and whatever I'm looking at, if I'm aware that I'm seeing my thoughts and my sensations, then I can work in my thoughts, and I can choose any thought. as long as I'm willing to feel the sensations that go with it. Now let me talk a little bit about thought exchange, which we're doing this afternoon. I started thought exchange, actually I am home, because I started it at Unity of New York. That's where it originated. And I began to look at affirmations and positive thoughts. And you know, we all know, of course, that if you take on a positive thought, your life becomes more positive. We know that. My question was, how come we don't do it? How come we take on a positive thought and in 1 second we're back to our negative thoughts? And I thought, we're not stupid, we're not lazy, we're not people who don't care, we're really trying. And what I came to understand was, if you had an experience that was negative around a positive thought as a child, like for instance, if you had said, I can do this, and someone slapped you across the face and said, no, you can't. Anytime you say, I can do this, you're gonna feel an uncomfortable sensation, and the child quickly figures that out, that the cause of that problem was that they said, I can do it. So they take on not what I call a negative thought, but what I call a protective thought. To get away from that, they immediately go to, I can't do it. And then they don't feel that sense of slap. They, of course, don't get to do what they want to do, but they're protecting themselves. And so what we do in the workshop is, if you want to take on the thought that you've been unable to take on, you have to get that you're going to feel that discomfort that goes with it. And if you want to stay with the thought, you feel the discomfort. There's a wonderful story. I was winning a Lifetime Achievement Award, and Lucy Arnaz was presenting it to me. And Lucy Arnaz does thought exchange with me. So we're backstage pacing the floor nervously because she has to go out and expound for 5 minutes on my virtues. And then I have to be an award winner, whatever that is. And she turns to me and says, okay, sensations. What are my sensations? My throat is tight. My stomach is churning. My hands are shaking. Just as she said that, the announcer said, ladies and gentlemen, won't you welcome the one, the only, the magnificent Miss Lucy Arnaz. And she went, I can go out there with that. And so we learn that if we want to hold the thoughts we want to hold, we need to be with the sensations they produce, whatever those are. And we need to be able to be with that discomfort. Often people, when they're working with me, they say, I really want to be successful and famous. And I say to them, are you willing to be that uncomfortable? Do you think Barbara Streisand is comfortable? Do you think Oprah Winfrey is comfortable? And so in this workshop, you bring issues, you bring thoughts that you have had trouble staying with, and I ask you to exchange them for the thoughts you want. But the crucial difference is then I say, where do you feel it in your body? And invariably, when people take on the thoughts that they've been unable to take on, they feel a tightness in their throat, or a squeezing in their chest, or a shaking in their hands. If you can be with that, that's all you have to do in order to hold whatever thoughts you want. And this is being kind to yourself. Being kind to yourself is allowing yourself to take on any thought you want, to understand that the universe is unlimited, and you have to allow yourself to be however you are when you take that on. The underlying thing that comes up also is those uncomfortable sensations are your inner child from long ago who has never been seen telling you, this scares me. And we've been taking that inner child and going, oh, shut up. I'm trying to do my career here. Get in the closet. Like, the child has to go crazy. And so we are not only allowing ourselves to have any thought we want, but we're healing our past by doing that. And all of this is kind. Now, I'd like to end this talk with the last chapter of the book, as the last line of the song, was maybe we'll find true peace of mind if we always remember we can be kind. One of the things I did when I released the book is I made a video with Nancy Lamott singing and with all sorts of images of kindness and also of the challenges we have. And it's a 4-minute video, and it's been going viral. I would ask you, if you enjoy it, to send the message to the world. My publisher originally said, how are we gonna do this without people stealing it? How do we charge? And I said, let's not. Let's just proliferate this message. So I would love to see this video. Take a look and go all over the world. Take a look at it. I would love to see my book be in every bathroom in America. So that is odd. And it's been out 3 months, we're in our fifth printing because people are buying them 10 at a time to give it. So I'm offering them at a very reduced price today because I really want to get this message out here. It's clear that it's become my mission. So do I have to move this for the screen? I guess I have to. Yeah? Okay. It's movie time.
Nobody really wants to fight. Nobody really wants to go to war. If everyone wants to make things right, then what are we always fighting for? Does nobody want to see it? Does nobody understand? The power to heal is right here in our hand. We can be kind. We can take care of each other. We can remember that deep down inside we all need the same thing. And maybe we'll find, if we are there for each other, that together we'll weather whatever tomorrow may bring. And it's not enough to talk about it, not enough to sing a song. We must walk the walk about it, you and I, do or die. We've got to try to get along. We can be kind, we can take care of each other. We can remember that deep down inside we all need the same thing. And maybe we'll find, if we are there for each other, that together we'll weather whatever tomorrow may bring. And maybe we'll find true peace of mind.